On today's podcast, I'll be covering all the updates of the last week. I'll look at some injuries and streamers. Plus, I'll go over which closers I trust and which ones I think are about to blow up. That's today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball.
This is Fastball Fantasy Baseball with Taylor Tarter and Matt Kirk. Let's get into it.
So unfortunately, I'm flying solo today and got lots to get to, so, and we've got a listener question too, so I'll go ahead and answer that now.
You've got mail.
So this question comes from, I don't know his actual name, so I'm going to give his Twitter handle. It's at Howard J. Dingers. And Howard J. Dingers asked about Julio Rodriguez versus Teoscar Hernandez in a redraft points league. I think it was a trade scenario. And, you know, what's your preference here, right? So for me, this is kind of a tough decision. I think they're really close, maybe a spot or two difference in rankings for outfielders. But I think I lean Julio in this case. The K rate is pretty close, so that's not much of a factor in my decision making, because both of them have the same problem for points leagues. They both strike out about the same amount of the time, the same rate. And of course, strikeouts are bad in points leagues. Walking, very good. People may point to Teoscar's average being low, but it's BABIP driven. And the reason why I like Julio better isn't because his average is higher, nothing like that. It's because he's got a better hard hit rate. He's got a better barrel rate. He's got a better ground ball rate, and he has room to improve his home run to fly ball rate. And if you look at Teoscar's plate discipline numbers from 2020 and 2021, which were his best seasons, right? And you combine them and take all of those, you take across the board his plate discipline numbers, Julio beats him in every single one so far this season, except swing and strike rate, and it's a 0.4% difference. So I think we've seen Julio so far have better plate discipline than Teoscar Hernandez has in his two best seasons. And just kind of like, I thought this was an interesting place to do sort of a little name game for Julio, and I'm going to do this in terms of like points leagues. I would take him over rest of season over players like Austin Meadows, Connor Joe, Charlie Blackman, right? I think those guys are ranked around him. I would want Julio over all of them and just barely over Seiya Suzuki. And I would have Christian Yelich just a little bit ahead of Julio. I think they're very, very similar players rest of season. And then if Schwarber can get his K rate down, I would rather have Schwarber just because he walks twice as much as Julio, but he's striking out over 30%. And because of that, I kind of lean Julio there. So hope that was helpful. If you guys have questions you want to send in, you can tweet us at Fastball Pod. You can tweet me directly at Taylor Tarter. And you can reach out to us on Instagram at Fastball Fantasy Baseball on the IG. And you can email us at fastballfantasybaseball@gmail.com as well. So let's see who had the best performance in matchup number 6. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. So, of course, the best hitting performance of last week was Boston middle infielder Trevor Story. And most of this came in one game. You know, Trevor Story last week went 9-for-25. That's a .360 batting average, 10 runs, 6 homers, 14 RBI, and he picked up 2 steals. He hasn't been caught on the base paths yet. So just something interesting there. He's finally coming around, and I posted about this on Twitter that, you know, if you listen to us early in the season, within the first 2 weeks, I think on the second episode after the start of the season, you know, we said, just give him time, right? And he's finally coming around, has room to improve his average. His BABIP is still only 273 right now. You know, obviously not playing in Coors. This is something we talked about as well. Not playing in Coors has a negative impact on his batting average. Coors boosts your BABIP, right? But Boston is actually a really, really close second in terms of boosting BABIP. So I don't see that as much of a factor for me as maybe some people do. I think he can bat maybe 250 rest of season. And some other things that I like, his barrel rate is up to 14%. His hard hit rate's a little low. It's 35.8%. Usually you want to see it over 40, but I think that's something he can improve. You know, he's typically over 40%. So I think that's something that will adjust. You know, there's issues with the ball this year. There's all this sciencey stuff that, you know, people like Eno and Todd Zola are writing about like the wake and the seams and all kinds of stuff like that, that are factoring into hard hit rate and line drive rate and things like that. But I think he should be able to make those adjustments. He's a very good hitter. And again, you know, the biggest thing here in his situation is like, he had to adjust to a new stadium. He had to catch up after he started spring late, and he had to recover from an injury that delayed his start. So if you hung on, you did a good job. A couple honorable mention hitters here. Dodgers outfielder Mookie Betts batted 357, 11 runs, 3 home runs, 7 RBI. Boston third baseman Rafael Devers, 393, 6 runs, 3 homers, 5 RBI, and a stolen base. I don't know why everybody hit 3 home runs last week. Mike Trout, Angels outfielder, 375 batting average, 7 runs, 3 home runs, 6 RBI. And then Randy Arozarena, Tampa outfielder, batted 435 with 5 runs, 3 home runs, 7 RBI, and a stolen base. So a lot of production from the bats last week. As far as pitchers, Philly starting pitcher Zach Wheeler went 7 innings, gave up 4 hits, no earned runs, no walks, 9 Ks, picked up a quality start in that game and a win. It's a 0.00 ERA last week with a 0.57 whip. He came into spring. This is another kind of like Trevor Story sort of thing. He came into spring with some issues, and that likely factors into his slow start. And, you know, I'm sure it's factoring into his average fastball velocity being down a mile per hour from last season. That's probably going to adjust, probably going to improve a little bit as he gets farther away from shoulder issues. But I think that 3.49 ERA for the season so far is kind of right on. His BABIP is a little high. His home run to fly ball rate is a little low. I think those things kind of balance out. There are some big problems, which I think are going to keep his ERA up in the mid threes. His curveball, slider, and sinker are all performing way worse than last year in terms of batting average against. His whiff and his put away rates are way worse too, and it's reflecting in his strikeouts per nine going down by 1 strikeout per 9 innings from last year. And he's still a good pitcher, right? Don't get me wrong, but I think the elite Zach Wheeler from last season is not the same Zach Wheeler as this season. He has to figure out those issues with his pitches before we can consider him top 10 again. Some honorable mention pitchers from last week: Cleveland starter Shane Bieber, 7 innings pitched, 6 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 10 Ks, a quality start, 2.57 ERA, 1.14 whip. Couple of 2 quality start pitchers from last week, including a few surprises. Not surprised seeing Seattle starter Logan Gilbert, guys like Tony Gonsolin. He's kind of coming back for the Dodgers. Miami starting pitcher Sandy Alcantara. Some interesting surprises: Philly pitcher Zach Eflin picked up 2 quality starts Kansas City starter Brady Singer has picked up two quality starts. He definitely has some flaws, but he's kind of interesting. You know what? Maybe we'll talk about him a little bit more along with some other pitchers next episode. But Chicago Cubs starter Wade Miley, who's back, he picked up two quality starts last week as well. And White Sox reliever Liam Hendricks had four saves, zero earned runs, and seven strikeouts in four innings pitched. Incredible. All right, let's get into a few important injuries.
Ouch, baby. Very ouch.
Cincy starting pitcher Nick Lodolo had a lower back strain at the end of April, and there have been a bunch of reports out over the last few weeks that he's, you know, he's almost back. Oh, he'll be back next week, oh, you know, but he's still out, and it just seems like he keeps tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it. And he's cleared to begin his throwing program again, but he still needs to check off some boxes again before he returns. He's an interesting name to kind of like keep an eye on, but man, like he's got to figure something out. Since he's starting pitcher Mike Minor, he should be back likely next week. He is scheduled to make his final rehab start in AAA tomorrow, and that would likely put him up against Boston in Boston next week. So I may stay away from that game, but I think he's a good add long-term. Typically with starting pitchers that are coming back off of injuries that are more than like a 10-day IL stint, I kind of like stay away from for that first game back, maybe even the first two games back. I'll sit them unless it's a really, really good matchup and I don't want to play him in Boston. White Sox outfielder Eloy Jimenez and fellow outfielder Luis Robert. Right, Eloy should be starting a rehab assignment next week, which probably puts him back in the first or second week of June. And then Luis Robert is out again because of COVID. Colorado first base outfielder Chris Bryant is out with a lower back strain. This might be a lost season. You know, he's struggling with hard hit rate and barrel rate, and perhaps his back issues, his other issues are playing into that, but, you know, looking like a lost season here. Detroit outfielder Austin Meadows is suffering from vertigo, and to quote a report about the situation, the team is quote-unquote very concerned. So not good here for Austin Meadows. Kansas City catcher Salvador Perez, he hit the 10-day IL last week, and he could be out a little bit. If MJ Melendez is still available and you don't have like a top five catcher, I think you should consider adding him. He's going to get a ton of playing time. LA Angels outfielder Taylor Ward, he's getting an MRI on his shoulder and neck after running into the outfield wall. And, you know, what a bummer after the start to the season that he's had. Dodgers starting pitcher Andrew Heaney is working his way back. He threw a bullpen last Friday, another on Monday. Good speculative add if you have the IL room. And fellow Dodgers starting pitcher Clayton Kershaw, he's apparently a couple weeks away from beginning a throwing program. And that means, you know, he's even farther away from actually coming back. And if you didn't bake time into your ranking of Kershaw, what are you doing? This is clearly what he is now. And you know, he might make 12 starts this year, 15 maybe. That is not a top 25 pitcher. You know, we can't consider him in there anymore. Milwaukee starting pitcher Freddy Peralta, he hit the IL for a shoulder issue. Minnesota starting pitcher Josh Winder has a shoulder impingement. He hit the IL. Bunch of pitchers. Mets starting pitcher Max Scherzer hit the IL with an oblique strain. Oblique issues are notoriously unpredictable. And so it could take way shorter or way longer than the 6 to 8 weeks that he's expected to be out. Probably now is 5 to 7 weeks. So tough situation if you're like me and roster Max Scherzer, and, you know, kind of a bummer. No, there's no real replacement, right? There's no real replacement for Max Scherzer. So you got to kind of like make it work. You got to bootstrap it. And I don't know if you're like me where you have, like, in one league, I have 8 players that are either day to day or on the IL, and I can't field a full team in that league. You know, it sucks. It's rough. Mets starting pitcher Jake DeGrom, he is throwing from 100 feet, and the team says he could begin throwing bullpen sessions as early as this weekend. So that's kind of interesting news. Yankees outfielder Giancarlo Stanton, he was pulled from the game on Tuesday with a strained calf. He'll have an MRI today, so pay attention to those updates. New York Yankees reliever Aroldis Chapman is day-to-day. Go grab Clay Holmes now. Yankees have a few players on COVID protocol. Joey Gallo is like the only like kind of big name player, but you got issues with COVID in New York. Oakland starting pitcher Frankie Montas should be back to make his start tomorrow, Thursday. San Diego starter Mike Clevinger back on the IL, this time with a tricep strain. Not looking good for him. Kind of a rough season here. And then San Diego starter, shortstop, and outfielder Fernando Tatis. So we got an injury update here. He had been fielding, but not swinging a bat, and just had a bone scan that revealed that he needs more time for healing before he's cleared to take at bats. And I think he's basically like the hitting version of DeGrom. Like, we have to look at both of them the same. They might be the best player when they play, but you have to bake in IL time, and it has to reflect in the way we value them. I can tell you right now, next season, I will pick Jose Ramirez ahead of Tatis. I'll pick Trey Turner, Vlad. I'll pick Bo Bichette. And this is in most leagues. I will do this. Points or Roto, head-to-head, whatever. Acuna, Otani, Soto, Tucker. I'm easily taking all of them over Tatis. And that puts Tatis at number 10. And after the season Manny Machado's having this year, I might put Manny Machado. Bryce Harper, I would put ahead of Tatis for next year. If we're talking about a points league, you're talking about having like Cole and Burns in there, Bueller, Gausman, right? So next year, Tatis is always going to be a hard player to rank because of his shoulder, because of the potential for injury being higher for him than most other players. So just something to think about. I'm sure we will talk about this throughout the season. I'm sure this will come up before the season starts. St. Louis outfielder Tyler O'Neill hit the IL with a shoulder issue. I tend to think that maybe he was playing hurt for part of or most of the season so far. He has a really disappointing hard contact metrics this year, barrel rate and hard hit rate, and things like that. For a guy as monstrous as he is, he should be like demolishing the ball, right? And he did last year, but he wasn't this year. And I think maybe his shoulder might have been bothering him through the first part of the year. And then Tampa starting pitcher Shane Baz has started rehab outings. It's looking like he'll be back in the beginning of June. That's a must add mustache. And I got a question about stashing Baz or Flaherty. I would go Baz. Flaherty just has too many issues. He's had issues with command in the past. I personally don't value Flaherty as high as most people. I'm probably lower on him than most people. So I would prefer Baz. Chance for more strikeouts. I just like him more. And then last one here, Washington starters Joe Ross and Steven Strasburg, they are working their way back from their respective injuries. The Nats expect 3 rehab outings before their return, and they both had their first rehab outing on Tuesday. Stras pitched in single A, Rawson double A. Stras went 2 2/3, gave up 3 hits, 3 earned, 4 walks, and 3 Ks. And obviously there's some rust in there. There's some command issues that he's got to make some adjustments to. He hasn't pitched in almost exactly a year. So he does have some rust to knock off. And then Joe Ross pitched 3 innings, gave up 2 hits, 0 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Looks a bit better. Definitely will help that Nats rotation when he comes back. Okay, let's look at some streamers for the week ahead.
Am I streaming?
So we'll start here with our streamers, going over the worst 10 teams in terms of run differential and the worst 10 teams in terms of batters striking out. Okay. And we're going to use this to cross-reference and see what teams are the worst at both. And we're going to pick on them. So worst 10 run differential teams: Pittsburgh minus 88, Cincy minus 64, Kansas City minus 56, Washington minus 50, Detroit minus 47, Baltimore minus 36, Oakland minus 31, Colorado minus 28, Seattle minus 26, and then Arizona and Chicago White Sox minus 22. And then the most batting strikeouts: Arizona, LA Angels, Atlanta, Baltimore, Oakland, Philly, Milwaukee, Chicago Cubs, Cincy, and Miami. And so the crossover there, the teams that we're really, really going to pick on in terms of streaming this week are Cincinnati, Baltimore, Oakland, and Arizona. So along those lines, Chicago Cubs starter Justin Steele has Cincinnati on Thursday the 26th. In ESPN leagues, he is rostered at 4%, so he's widely available. The good for him is that his strikeouts per nine is over 10, and his BABIP is high, which means he's been getting unlucky, so you can expect his luck to improve a little bit. Also, his slider, sinker, and cutter are all performing very well. The bad for him is that he does give up over 4 walks per 9. He has a low left on base rate and a low home run to fly ball rate, so he's not stranding runners that much. The home run to fly ball rate is likely to come up. He's likely to get more earned runs added to him, and the wall, walking, you're putting runners on base. So this is a good matchup add. Long term, maybe not so much. Oakland starting pitcher Cole Irvin has Texas on Friday the 27th. He's rostered in 10.8 of ESPN leagues. Not a ton of walks here, which is good, but also not a ton of strikeouts. He probably should be rostered more than like 10% of leagues. Yes, some regression is coming, but again, this is a good matchup. And in the same matchup, you have Texas starter John Gray, who's pitching against Oakland in that game. He's rostered in just about 50% of ESPN leagues. His fastball is getting hit hard, but all of his other pitches look good. Lots of good metrics, but one issue for him is that he doesn't really strand runners. He's got a 62% left on base rate. You really want to see like 70-75%. He did have a good game. He has had a few good games. This is a good game against Oakland, and he could be an interesting buy low candidate for the rest of the season. He could be an add and a hold here. Houston starting pitcher Jose Urquidy has Seattle on Saturday the 28th. He's rostered in 52% of ESPN leagues. He needs to be rostered more. Not very many Ks, but he's not walking a ton of batters and not giving up very many home runs. One problem is that he is not getting a ton of ground balls, which if you're not getting ground balls, it's very risky if you're a contact pitcher. But he does have a good team. So he does have a good defense behind him. I think he's a great add against Seattle. They strike out a bunch, but maybe, and perhaps the rest of the season. I do like Tyler Anderson better. On Saturday, Dodgers starter Tyler Anderson has Arizona. He's rostered in 36.7% of ESPN leagues. He should be rostered in like 80% of leagues until Kershaw is back. And that could be weeks. And this is a great matchup. He's got a great matchup against Arizona. Great background metrics. And is an awesome long-term ad. Maybe one of the best long-term ads out of all the streamers I'm going to give you today. Another streamer that I love and that you should be adding now, and you, this might be too late, but if you follow us on Twitter, we would have told you to pick him up like 2 weeks ago. San Francisco starting pitcher Alex Cobb has Cincinnati on Sunday the 29th. He is rostered in 30% of ESPN leagues. He should be like 100% owned. He has an ERA over 5, yes, but look at all the other stuff, right? Expected ERA, FIP, XFIP, Sierra are all under 3. His bad ERA is almost entirely BABIP driven. The BABIP's going to even out, and his ERA is going to drop. He is a must add, especially for this game. Things are going to turn around for him. Boston starting pitcher Nick Pivetta has Baltimore on Sunday the 29th. Nick Pivetta rostered in 34.6% of ESPN leagues. I would say he's not a long-term add here because his BABIP is about 50 points lower than normal. So you can see the regression will be coming, but this is a good matchup against Baltimore on Sunday. Texas starter Dane Dunning has Oakland on Sunday the 29th. He is rostered in 8.8% of ESPN leagues. He has just under 9 strikeouts per 9 innings, 74% left on base rate, 52% ground ball rate, all pretty good. His BABIP is slightly low and his home run to fly ball rate is slightly high, so they probably like even out. And as they do, I think his ERA kind of like sticks around 4, which is solid. It's not, you know, great, but it's solid. And his expected batting average on all of his pitches, except one, are higher. His expected batting average against, rather, are high. His expected batting average against on all of his pitches, except one of them, are higher than his batting average against, which is a problem. And so he, to me, is a streaming option only. He does have some good background things, but he's got to get some issues figured out with his pitches before you consider him a long-term ad. White Sox starter Johnny Cueto, still kicking, man. He has Chicago Cubs on Sunday the 29th. He's rostered in 10% of ESPN leagues. He has only had 2 starts, so there's not a ton to go off of here. I think this is a great ad for the game, and then basically like hold until he's not good anymore. You can probably get him super, super cheap in your leagues. So, you know, go out, snag him, ride the wave, see how he does. Oakland starting pitcher James Caprellian has Texas on Sunday, and he is rostered in about 4% of ESPN leagues. Again, this is a streaming option only. His BABIP is way low, so regression is coming, but good matchup. Washington starting pitcher Josiah Gray has Colorado on Sunday. He is rostered in about 31.5% of ESPN leagues. He's had a few clunkers, but he's mostly been pretty good getting strikeouts. And, you know, we've known that he is a high home run pitcher. Like, that's kind of who he is. A lot of fly balls, kind of like Max Scherzer was, right? Lots of fly balls. But this game against Colorado is in Washington, so good matchup for him. And finally, Mets starting pitcher David Peterson has Washington on Monday the 30th. He is rostered in 5.5% of ESPN leagues. He's been up and down between the MLB and AAA. I like him for this matchup, but probably not for much longer. All right, I'm going to take a quick break here. I'll be right back to discuss closers right after a word from our sponsor. You know, we don't talk a ton about closers on this podcast. So what I want to do is just kind of spend some time covering a few situations, kind of going through the league, the closers in the league, but focusing on a few situations where I think there's some opportunities for other closers to take over, ones that I'm worried about, you know, and hopefully we can find some gems here. Obviously, there's guys like Liam Hendricks, Emmanuel Clase, Josh Hader, who are not really at risk of losing their jobs, but who is? And you know, who do we think is due for some regression? So just to kind of go through, here are some other pitchers kind of rapid fire that I'm not really worried about. I'm not worried about ERA spikes. I'm not really worried about them getting replaced. San Diego closer Taylor Rogers, Jordan Romano in Toronto, Raisel Iglesias in LA. Of all of these guys who I'm not worried about, he would be the one that's like closest to being worried about. But Joe Maddon loves to stick with one guy, right? And Iglesias isn't the guy. They just gave him a big deal. They're not gonna, unless he just like absolutely blows up, which I don't see happening, he's got the job. Mets starter Edwin Diaz, not starter, closer Edwin Diaz, Daniel Bard in Colorado, just because they don't really have anybody else. Dodgers, Craig Kimbrell, Houston, closer Ryan Pressly, Tanner Rainey in Washington, again, one of those situations where like, who else is going to close? And then Danny Jimenez in Oakland, I think there's regression coming, but he's got like a 0.5 ERA right now, and I don't see it getting higher than two. So here are some players that I am somewhat worried about losing their job, and I would rather roster an alternate pitcher on their team. And the first one is Yankees closer Aroldis Chapman. Lots of his background data is right on with what he's done in his career, but the biggest difference in what's going on this year that's driving all of his advanced ERA metrics up is 6 walks per 9 innings and a very low ground ball rate. He's also lost a mile per hour on his average fastball velocity, and there's risk of him being out, and I would just add Clay Holmes right now. There's a couple of guys who could end up with a closing opportunity, but I think Clay Holmes is, I would rather have Clay Holmes, period, than Aroldis Chapman. In Kansas City, Scott Barlow has some signs of regression coming. He has an astronomical left on base rate. It's like in the 90s. He has a very low home run to fly ball rate, very low BABIP, and I would prefer his backup, Josh Stomont, but to be honest, I'm not dying to have either one. If I have Scott Barlow, I would have Josh Stomont on my watch list. Minnesota closer Emilio Pagan, he's got some really weird metrics. He has an 11 strikeouts per 9, very good. 7 walks per 9, very bad. 233 BABIP, really low, getting lucky. 95% left on base, very, very high, getting lucky. 30% home run to fly ball rate, very unlucky, right? So he's, all of this has led to him having a 213 ERA, but all of the expected ERA metrics, think his ERA should be over 4. And I agree. And I would rather have Joan Duran instead. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. And then in Miami, Anthony Bender is the closer right now. I think Miami wants Dylan Floro to close. I actually think Bender is better than his ERA suggests, but for me, I think his issue is that the team would like Floro to close, and I think Bender will get replaced. And for Bender, his BABIP and his home run to fly ball rate are way up, and so you should see some positive regression coming to him. They also have Tanner Scott and Cole Sulcer, who could close instead. I would rather have Bender the most out of all these arms, and I have him in here because I really think like Floro is their planned closer in Miami. Of all the closers, here are a few that I'm worried about, in particular about an ERA blowup. So I'm worried about Kenley Jansen in Atlanta. His BABIP and his home run to fly ball rate are both very low, meaning he's getting lucky, he's getting fortunate as they come up. His ERA is going to come up. His left on base rate is also way down, and all of this is going to catch up to him. However, Will Smith is likely next in line to close, and he's not really doing any better right now than Kenley Jansen is. Now, if Kenley Jansen's ERA blows up, maybe they turn to Will Smith. But I personally would, if I had Kenley Jansen, I would try to unload him soon before we see an ERA spike. Texas closer Joe Barlow, this is another player where like I'm trying to trade high. I think there's some regression coming. I don't think he's going to lose his job to Matt Bush anytime soon, but I would, again, definitely prepare to see his ERA go up. And you can look at a few things, right? Low BABIP, low ground ball rate, sky high left on base rate. Those things will adjust and will result in more runs. And then in Philly, Corey Knebel, I'm mostly worried about his ERA blowing up than losing his job, because Yuris Familia is next in line. He's not doing great either. So this is one of those situations where even if Corey Knebel does blow up, I think he stays the closer. But I think his ERA will spike. And then the ones I'm super worried about, and I think you should like get out now, is Baltimore closer Jorge Lopez. His BABIP is so low and his home run to fly ball rate is zero. So he hasn't given up a home run yet. That will change. And he has 5 walks per 9 innings. Felix Bautista is next in line. He's doing pretty good, and I buy his background metrics more. That's somebody that I would kind of keep an eye on, throw on your watch list, Felix Bautista. And then Tampa Bay closer Andrew Kittredge. Tampa typically mixes and matches. This is a situation where Kittredge has a low strikeouts per 9 rate, low BABIP, which I think end up hurting him in the future. They're going to catch up to him. And I like Brooks Raley a lot more here. He already has a few saves. I think they kind of have a changing of the guard as the season continues. And then for one reason or another, here are 3 bullpens that I am absolutely staying away from. And that's Detroit with Gregory Soto and Michael Fulmer. In Boston, I am not touching Hansel Robles or Jake Diekman. And Seattle is just spreading saves out between too many players, and can't bother with that. We'll be covering all of the big news in baseball, the best players to drop an ad, streamers, and more. So make sure to subscribe and tune in so you're notified when episodes publish every Wednesday. In the meantime, you can tweet us at FastballPod, reach out to us on Instagram at FastballFantasyBaseball, or email us at FastballFantasyBaseball@gmail.com, and we'll respond. You can also read my column called By the Numbers on fantasypros.com. I do a data deep dive each week. So if you like what we do on the podcast, you'll definitely like reading the article. And finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps move this podcast up the list on all the podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So it's something that really helps us out. And thanks for listening.